I've seen a lot of change, been through a lot of pain. Some things are not the same as they were a year ago, but all will be okay. I move on each and every day. The past is where it stays, way back a year ago.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Dennis with Wake and Make. This week's guest is a former child star actor turned leathercraft enthusiast and small business owner, Josiah Hansen of Hansen Leather Co. How's it going, man?
I'm doing great.
You used to be a child actor. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Where are you getting that from?
Wikipedia was wrong about you?
Is it on Wikipedia? I have a Wikipedia page.
Yeah, it also said that your favorite song in high school was No Scrubs by TLC. Is that true?
Oof. I don't know who Josiah is on Wikipedia.
Oh.
Are you serious? Are you for real?
Yeah. You were also in a boy band with your two brothers, right? And you are a rollerblading enthusiast.
You are making stuff up. Rollerblade enthusiast. I couldn't stay on rollerblades for my life.
Not too coordinated on the rollerblades?
Nah, ice skates, maybe a little bit. I can't stop, but I can get going.
Why do you need to stop? Just keep going.
I don't know. That's why they make those walls on the edge of the ice rink.
Just skate next to that. That totally works. What's up, man? Thanks for being on the podcast. I'm super excited to have you on. We had you on the last podcast, the Monday Motivation, and that was a success. And I always love an opportunity to hang out with my friend Josiah.
Appreciate it. It was a while ago and it was a lot of fun.
It was one of my first episodes there too. And this is one of the first episodes. So,
well, I'm honored then to be first twice.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of the first twice. Exactly. Yeah, man. So cool to have you on. Can you tell us a little bit about where you're from? What got you into, being a leathersmith, and, kind of introduce yourself?
Josiah Hansen. Apparently have a Wikipedia page.
That's right. No Scrubs. It's a good song. I mean, it really is.
There you go. I'm from Rochester, Minnesota, and the great state of all the lakes. I started leathercraft going on 8 years now ago. So it's been quite a while. Started off as a challenge from my friend. He's like, bro, you should make a belt for yourself. It's like really easy. Like, okay. All right. And he just kept, you know, telling me you should make a belt for yourself. And at the time he worked at one of the places where we get our leather from. So I went into there and he kind of showed me the world of leathercraft as it was. And he showed me what to get and how to kind of do it, kind of talked me through it. And then I went home and made it. So I'm actually not wearing a belt right now, but I could go get it. I used it like every day for years and I still wear it today. So, and that just kind of taught me the longevity of that type of material, leather, and how good it is. So that's kind of how I got started. After I got married, my wife, Brianna, she would be here, but she's not here.
she would be here, but she isn't.
She's not here. She's with her friends. but she is a huge part of the business now. When we got started, she wasn't necessarily a part of the business, and it really wasn't a business really either. I acted like it was. I didn't even act like it was. I said I had a business, but I didn't like mentally act like it was a business till later.
That's so funny. When you have the mindset of an entrepreneur, even before you own any kind of business, whether it's going to be successful or not, you almost want to call anything that you do a business. I made beef jerky for a while and sold it to my friends at work. And I was like, yeah, I'm in the beef jerky game. Like, I'm a professional beef jerky maker, like all about it. And then you realize it's not really a business.
The entrepreneur stuff kind of went way back when I was a kid, which I've never really told anyone else, except for Nick from Hemlock and Hyde. I just told him the story the other day.
You're going to drop an exclusive here on Wake and Make podcast?
Yeah.
I love it. One.
It's just, I was thinking back to when I was a kid and we had this like porch on the second floor of our farmhouse, and I would go in there and I would write out little price tags, and I would take all the crap from our house and just like line it up and make displays and stuff like that. And then I'd make fake money and give it to my mom and bring her in and be like, okay, buy stuff. And I called it playing store. So that was the first, like, I guess, entrepreneurial
aspirations.
Yeah, aspiration that I had, I guess. And I thought that was kind of interesting looking back at that time. But I kind of forgot where I was going with.
Yeah, it's all good. Your buddy went in a different direction. You were doing photography.
Oh, photography. Yeah. That started out, my mom got a digital camera, you know, it was like a big deal. So, and it was just like a point and shoot type digital camera, and it was still really cool. And I got it, and I was like taking pictures of blades of grass, and I found out it had video capability. So I was like making little videos, but I didn't know how to edit. I didn't know you could like take it from a digital camera and put it on like a phone, probably not even a phone at that time, or like a computer and edit the little clips. I had no idea. So I was just like making little videos all at once. It was a good time.
Planning it out. Like, okay, here's a scene. Here's a scene. Here's a scene.
Yeah. And I remember thinking like, or realizing that you could have like depth of field. And I was like, whoa, that's so cool. Like, it's like the movies, you know, how they have the depth of field. And so I remember my brother telling him, go on the other side of the car, open the door and get inside. And I'm going to start the shot outside of the car on top of the, like up above the roof. And as you're getting in the car, I'm going to pan down, you know, down and to the left. And I was like, I remember like movies, they would have those scenes where they're going through a wall into another room. You know, I was trying to do that. And yeah, so
that's so cool. Did you end up exploring like videography much more after that? Or did you kind of go in the direction of photography?
I guess you would say videography more. Here's something else I haven't really said much about.
Another exclusive. Dropping bangers.
I really love the world of photography and the world of videography and being able to tell a story with photo and video. It's just incredible to me how some people are just absolutely really good at it. So at my church, we did a lot of plays growing up, and I would write the plays. I'd write script and kind of direct it and whatever. And then I realized you could do that with video. And so I started doing that, and oh man, I dragged my family and a few of my friends through a whole summer of shooting. And I edited a 30 some minute video for our church. And it's so cringy.
It's so it always is.
I can't even watch it. But man, was that an experience. I realized how long it took you to edit. I mean, I was probably editing that 20-30 minute video for like 100 hours. It was insane. And like learning the program that we were using, and I had a friend helping me like big time with all of that. So it was a lot of fun though.
I think with video editing, which I was really into it. Me and my buddy Tyler had a production company called Paper Street Productions.
And you were a professional, weren't you?
No. Well, yeah, I guess so. I don't know. I was more of his assistant, in all honesty. He's the one that had the cameras and the computer. And we were really, more so me, but he also was like really into the like Orange County like hardcore scene. And there was a lot of bands in Orange County, obviously Southern California, a lot of bands from our school, and we would film them and make music videos. So I learned a lot from him on Final Cut Pro. And this was a long time ago, you know, like high school, right? Like it was a long time ago. And I always had such a passion, kind of something similar to you. I was really active in my church at the time, and I would get asked to go, not just with our church, but other churches in the area, to go and film their like winter camps or summer camps, and kind of be a fly on the wall, and then edit all of the footage and make them like a camp video. And man, it's so much fun. And I now editing this podcast, both the audio and the video and everything like that, it takes crazy time. Like I don't really think people understand how much time it takes. And my wife Michelle, she's like, dude, you were in there for like hours at a time, like not even peeking your head out. Like you either love it or you don't. I could imagine like people being like, this is way too much, like too time consuming. But how you slice up a clip and edit things and like time things to music and everything like that, it can be an art form. And when you see something transform from like hundreds of clips down to one solid bar on a timeline that's like cohesive, it's really rewarding at the end of it. And but it can also be a little bit disheartening when you put that much work into it and people don't appreciate it as much as you appreciate your own work, which I'm experiencing a little bit recently.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you introduce social media into it, like you have with your TikTok videos and stuff like that, yeah, you get that for sure.
Yeah, it can be a real bummer sometimes, but then you have to remind yourself, hey, just do it for yourself and your friends. And as long as you're having fun, keep pushing forward. Nothing, you know, mm-hmm. nothing happens overnight. You got to put the work in. And I'm a big advocate for that. So if I, what I tell other people is a lot easier than telling it to myself though, right? Like, I think we all have that issue.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me how your life kind of changed. You're a new father. How old's your son now?
I forget how many months, but someone will say, how many months old is your child? And you're like, I don't know. After 12, why do you keep track? I mean, other than clothing.
More than a year. Yeah. More than a year, less than 2 years. Yeah. One and a half. I'll give you that much. How did your life change? Whether it's with your business or your marriage, your life in general, how did it change for the positive and the negative when you became a new dad? Two years isn't that long. You still have a toddler running around, getting into everything and wanting to probably be with dad all of the time and trying to balance everything. How is it being a young kind of new father?
It's very interesting. Yeah. It's a lot to navigate. I don't have it down at all. But as far as like work-life balance, that's something I think we all have to work on continually. If you're a parent, and even if just in general relationships too, right? Like your friends, like you can't just neglect all your friends. And that's a hard thing to do when you're like working a full-time job and then coming home and doing your other thing, basically full-time. You still got to make time for your friends and your family and things like that. But, we kind of sat down and made myself a schedule, like a work schedule. And then I try to stick to that work schedule. So, at like 3:30 for my day job, and I'm in the shop at 5:30 till 10. And that's generally what I try to stick to, which is basically all night. And if I have like a project that I really got to crank out, you know, I'll stay later, but generally it's 5:30 to 10. My kid does see me when I'm in the shop from time to time, because there's like a hole in the floor. And so he peeks down through the hole and he says, daddy or dada. And I peek up there and I can see his like nose and eye. So sometimes he gets to look down and, you know, but he's got to like clear everything out of his closet to find the hole, but he does it.
Giving you guilt trips from above you, huh? That's crazy.
A little bit. What's really tricky is when he is having a night upstairs and crying or something like that, and you're down in the basement and you're just like burnishing. Like, I feel like I should really help out right now, but you're like, I got to get this burnishing done.
Does your wife come down and say, hey, I really need your help right now. Like this is, we got a code 5 right now. What's going on? Like I need some help. Or does she just try to figure it out? Like you're not there. Like if you're completely off property.
Normally she is good about figuring it out, but also like, that's why God made phones. So, you know, she gives me a FaceTime call and says, hey, upstairs.
Yeah. We need you. It's dad mode. How does your life philosophy affect your business?
I don't want to be waste. I don't, you know, we only have so much time in a day. We only have so much time in our life. And you want to do something that makes you feel fulfilled and gives you purpose and really at the end of your day makes you feel like you've accomplished something. And to me, working with my hands does that for me. Or building something or creating something. I think more creating something, because if I wasn't in leathercraft, which I love leathercraft, but if I wasn't in leathercraft, maybe I would be doing photography and then I'd be building a business around photography, or I'd be doing it around coffee somehow and maybe building a business around coffee. I love creating something gives me fulfillment. So it doesn't have to be me working with my hands and completing a project or a bag that day. It has to be me working towards something bigger, not necessarily an end goal either, because there really isn't an end goal to business. Unless,
there's never an end goal.
Unless you're building to sell it, right?
Yeah.
Which I'm not doing because this is like my baby, right? So I'm trying to grow it. I'm trying to build it. I love thinking outside the box. I love hanging around people that push me to be more creative, push me to be better at a particular part of the business. Just people that are maybe a step ahead of me or a bunch of steps ahead of me if they'll have me around them. You know, I think it's important to surround yourself with people like that to help you be better at what you're trying to do. And also just being creative is huge for me. There's a lot of jobs out there that are just like not creative. They just don't do that for me. And I've worked some of those and I had to do something outside of work to get that.
Yeah, 100%. I think that I can see that in you so much, and you do such a good job through your social media telling that story in such a long format. And what I mean by that is your Instagram, your let's just say your online presence, you do such a good job showing your passions and everything that you just explained, photography, leathercraft, coffee, and not in any particular order. Just, I think that people kind of cluster their interest and no one really knows who they're looking at. Like we try to portray ourselves through our social media persona of who we are. You do a really, really good job of storytelling in that sense that I don't see very often. Because you're able to spread things out. If someone were to scroll through your social media, they would know your interests. You're able to show them, but not go too big where people are like, oh, he's into monster trucks and he's also into like fishing. And then he's also into this and this and this. Like, you narrow it down. And even with your passions, you keep it cohesive in the sense of you present yourself really well as a catalog. And that's a huge compliment, because I think that—
Thank you.
You're welcome. You do such a good job.
I really appreciate it.
At this point in leathercraft, when I look at people's, their Instagram, what's it called? Instagram profiles or whatever. I'm not really looking at the stitching. I'm not really looking at like the edges or even the patterns really. I'm looking more about their branding and their storytelling, like 100%. And you do—
Me too.
You do such a good job of it. And it's something I really admire, man. Your photography is insane. And when I said this to you last time when you were on the podcast, when I scroll through Instagram, which is really rarely these days, I feel like no one scrolls through Instagram. That's why numbers are down so much. I'm like, we're just—
I do.
Oh, you do? Thank you.
I'm looking for 21 grams and it's like, come on, where is it at?
Thank
why
you,
won't it show it to me? Come on. It's not in chronological order anymore.
I know, I miss those days. You do a really good job when you present yourself. I did a little deep dive on your Instagram. I like to prepare myself before recording a podcast, because although I know you better than the majority of people that I'm going to have on the podcast, like, I still want to like know what got you into it. Like, I went back to look at some of your early projects and, man, like, as I consider you a close friend, I'm super like proud of you, man. Like you've come so far, and you keep pushing. Like, talk about cringe. When I look back at the things I was doing a year and a half ago, or even a year ago, even 6 months ago, I look at it and I thought it was the best thing ever. And I'm like, why am I not getting put on? Why this? Like, why that? Then I look at it, I'm like, oh yeah, that's the reason. It wasn't good. It was garbage. Like,
same thing here. I look back at the photos I took a year ago and I'm like, what in the world was I thinking? What, why did I think that angle was going to be any good? But you know what? I'll look back in a year from now and I'll do the same thing. And that is a good thing, I think. If you're not looking back at your stuff and you're like super stoked still on whatever you did 2 years ago, then you probably didn't progress. I mean, unless you've arrived, which they say you don't do.
I don't want to. I never want to be that person. Otherwise, it's boring. Like, I've been that person. And not that I was on the top of my game in the different mediums of art that I did prior to Leathercraft, but as soon as I got any kind of comfort in it, I was bored. Like, I don't like being comfortable in the sense of business, in the sense of like craft. I'm constantly trying to elevate, and I'm so fortunate that I have people like you in my life that are so good at your craft and will tell me straight up. There's been times that you've been like, you know, not in a negative way, but you give really good constructive criticism as well, and you say it in a tone that always resonates. Like, hey, why don't you try this? Oh, okay. I mean, that's a pleasant way of suggesting something. Like, I really admire that, man. You're really good at speaking to your peers to inspire them. I appreciate you, man.
Thank you very much. Those are some high praises.
Yeah. Well, that's my job, man.
I appreciate it.
No, I try to, you know, like, I wouldn't have you on if I didn't, you know, admire you to a certain degree and like appreciate you as a person. Like, I think that as long as I've been in Leathercraft and really active within the community, you've always been somebody that has just been so good to me, so kind to me. And it goes a long way. You never know who you talk to and what kind of day that they're having. And there's been more than once that I was having just a complete shit day. And I get like a little text from you or whatever. And you're like, hey man, saying what's up, appreciate you, keep going. I'm like, what? Like, how are you that tuned in? That's so weird.
Someone told me. So they're like, hey, help this guy out. No, I'm just messing.
Aside from photography and photography, Leathercraft, coffee, what are you into? Like, what do you do? You spend time with your friends. I know you're pretty close with your family, right? Like, you're pretty close.
Yeah, I am. Yeah. I would say so. I mean, I hope they think the same thing.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, there's like seven of us, so there's a good crew of us.
Dang, that's crazy. You're Amish, right? That's, you got a big family?
Yes. No.
Oh. Yes. No.
That's, I don't cool. think I'd be on this podcast if I was on.
Oh, yeah. You can't have any technology. I know you still have a horse and buggy, but you got to also have a computer. It's 2022, you know, there's certain. Hey,
I wish I had a horse and buggy. that'd be awesome. I'd just like take that to Quick Trip and go get Coke or something. I don't know.
What got you so into coffee, man? You're like you're a nut. Any opportunity there is to bring it up within our group?
My brother started me when I was like 13, I think. I'm starting my kid now. Like, I'm grinding coffee. I'm grinding coffee. And he knows when I'm grinding coffee, you come over here and you got to sniff these beans, right? So I show him the grinds. He goes, he like blows into them. It's disgusting. But yeah, my brother just got me started in coffee and I drank it. But I think this goes back to a little bit of philosophy as well. I remember thinking, all right, I like coffee, but I see all these videos on Instagram, YouTube about people doing coffee in these different ways. And I'm like, why do they do that? So I started learning a little bit about coffee and I learned you could do a pour over and why a pour over is better, in my opinion, like a Chemex or whatever, or a V60. And I was like, so it's better. Now, how do I do that coffee at home? Like the coffee I get at the coffee shop, how do I do that at home? And then I was like, if I'm going to do this, I need to really do it. I just really just deep dive into it and learn as much as I can. And now I'm just like, I don't know everything about coffee, but I have some barista friends that are like incredibly brilliant with coffee, and they're giving me recipes of different coffees to try, and it's a lot of fun. It's just
it's crazy. You light up as soon as I said coffee, and I'm like, okay, we're gonna get Josiah to talk. Just bring up coffee, and I think it's really cool that you're so passionate about it. For me, you and I have had this conversation. Like, coffee is a utility to me. Like, I'm only if I like the taste of coffee, but I'm like a throw in a pod into a Keurig while it's brewing. I'm getting 20 other things done before I come out to my shop. Like, it's so much of a, I don't know how else to say it. It's just a utility. And I think to do it in the way that you do it, you have to slow down so much to appreciate it. And that's the part of it that I envy about anyone that is that invested into brewing coffee a certain way. Like, you really gotta like slow I wish that like the Keurig pot would like brew faster. I wish that like water would boil faster, because I got 20 things to do. Yeah, like
There's a thing for you. It's called an alarm clock that also is a coffee maker.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you can set it. That's right.
Yeah, it costs a butt ton of money, but you can set the timer and it'll do like a pour over sort of for you. You can wake up and have a good cup. You didn't have to put a pod in.
Yeah, well, you put it in the night before, right? Or how do you do it?
I guess. It sounds a little weird to me to like grind, because the whole idea of like grinding your own beans is to have them as fresh as possible. But sure. I mean,
yeah. I bet you if you had the money to spend, you could get like a hopper with like whole beans, and then it would like funnel into a place that it grinded, did the whole like process on a timer, and then you wake up and you have like fresh coffee. I'm sure. I don't got money like that. Yeah, I don't got, it's like Pee Wee's Big House, you know, like everything is mechanical. And it, did you ever see Pee Wee Herman's Big Adventure? You're probably too young, huh?
I mean, I watch old movies all the time. I'm kind of an old soul when it comes to that.
Yeah. I know. It's creepy and it's weird. But I like those kind of movies. I was a big fan of, do you ever see The Labyrinth with David Bowie?
No, I haven't.
You got to look up that one too.
I'm catching up. There's like decades of movies that I haven't seen, like all kinds of decades.
Right. What's your favorite era of movie or genre of movie that you like?
So I really do like old classic movies, because a lot of times they don't get the appreciation they should, because of the fact that these were groundbreaking movies back in their time. Like, this is the first of this type of movie, and that should be appreciated.
Like Step Brothers.
That should be appreciated. Yeah.
Step Brothers should be. Will Ferrell, come on. One of the greatest classics I've ever seen.
There you go.
There you go.
Straight from the 1940s.
Straight from the 1940s. I love man, I have the attention span of absolutely nothing, man. Like a gnat. And the only thing that can keep me in one place for 2 hours is like the stupidest kind of humor movie. Anything Will Ferrell, I'm a fan of. But I also like, I don't know, I like movies that Quentin Tarantino put out. Like, I don't know.
The way that man thinks and puts a story together is like,
he's a psychopath. Yeah.
Incredible. Yeah. I do have, a dark side to me. I don't know if you knew that. My favorite author back in high school was Edgar Allan Poe, which is like a super old dude.
Yeah. I'm familiar. I totally get it.
That was my first short story I read as a kid.
Or what short story?
It was The Pit and the Pendulum. So the story goes, my parents got a van, and because there was a lot of us, it was a used van, and underneath one of the seats was this book, and it was like for Edgar Allan Poe for kids or something like that.
That sounds like an oxymoron.
I know. And my mom's like, you shouldn't be reading that. And I'm like, but it's really good. And so later on, I like snuck back in, I threw it back underneath the chair or the seat, and I went back in and read the whole book by myself. I like snuck into the van, read the book, and I was hooked. And yeah, Edgar Allan Poe, man.
That's so awesome. You can be like, Mom, I'm not supposed to read it, but why is it in the van then? Like, I didn't put it here.
And why is it a kid's book?
Yeah, exactly. That's a random, it's like Stephen King for kids. Like,
dude, they should do it. Look how I turned out.
Yeah. You are all right. You know, I think that's good. I want to double back to kind of what we were discussing before, as far as like your personal life and your business life and your interests that you, the persona that you present on social media. How do you, like, what's the importance of keeping something separate? Like, I know for myself, there's a couple things that I'm very, very open about, and there's some things that I don't want to discuss or share on social media. How do you make those decisions? Is that a conversation you have with your wife? Is that, it's a really open question. You can answer it really however you'd like.
Basically, I don't really talk about stuff that are, I guess, hot topics, you know, something that's going to really burn somebody. I prefer to show things that I'm enjoying that I think other people will enjoy too. Politics and religion, some people enjoy it. Everyone wants to fight about it. And I am not on Instagram to fight. I have absolutely zero interest in getting into a fight on Instagram or Facebook. None. And if you want to pick a fight with me, I'll just ignore it. So
yeah, I think you have more willpower than most. I'm a pretty opinionated person and really outspoken, but I kind of live by the same rules as well. I don't think that, especially as business owners, that we should really discuss. Well, you can. I mean, I'm not one to tell someone else how to run their business. That's not my place. Do whatever you want. But for me, when it comes to, say, politics, you're going to, if you're voicing your opinion on it, you're going to immediately lose half of your audience and half of your potential customers and clients. And religion is even more, because there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of religions. You're going to really single yourself out, and that might work good in the short run if you're doing something that's trending, if something's, you know, there's some political news. I know for myself, I did a TikTok video of that meme that was going around with like Bernie Sanders with his gloves on, which I thought was just fun. I looked at it more as a meme than anything else. I didn't get any pushback from the other side of the aisle or anything like that, because I thought some people didn't like you. I just ignored it. But if you were to make something as your brand, like something that was branded around that, I don't think it would go really well.
Yeah. I mean, some people are just that way. They like to really push their opinion on people. And that's not me. I'm from Minnesota. I'm a little bit passive aggressive. And I'd be like, I got other stuff to do, you know?
Is it Minnesota where they shot the show Bobby's World?
I have no idea.
You don't remember that yes. cartoon when we were yes. little?
In fact, it was down the street, actually.
Really? Really? But yeah. You never saw Bobby's World?
No.
As like a kid, it's a kid's cartoon.
Dude, I grew up on a farm, and I did not watch like hardly any TV.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. I didn't watch much TV either. I don't even like TV now, but I got down with some Ninja Turtles. I got down with some Bobby's World. I didn't spend much time inside. I was out throwing dirt clods at cars and stuff, you know?
Yeah. I was out there with that digital camera.
Making your own TV shows.
Or push mowing acres of yard of grass.
God, child labor. That's funny. It seems to be a theme in these podcasts that we've been doing. Child labor laws, man.
You want to mow the yard? You want to get on the rider? Go push it.
Yeah, go push the riding mower.
The entire thing. And make sure you have straight rows.
Man, that's wild. You lived on a farm growing up.
I accomplished it.
That's cool.
I feel like I learned a lot of good stuff from it. I tell you one thing, I do remember push mowing for hours and getting done, and it was a hot summer day, and like sitting down on the porch and like looking at the grass and being like, wow, look at those lines. Such a dad, a dad move, you know, look at those straight lines, but like being proud of like, I don't know, the job I just did. Yeah.
That's awesome, man. I want to hear more about what it was growing up, how it was growing up on a farm, and also how you put together a complete collection for your brand, Hansen Leather Co. We're going to take a quick break real quick to do a little sponsored ad. And then when we get back, Josiah is going to explain what it was like growing up on a farm, as well as how he handpicks designs and patterns to put together as a complete collection for his leather good brand. We're here with Josiah from Hansen Leather Co., good friend of mine, our co-host for this episode. What's up, man? So before we went to the break, we were talking about your experience growing up on a farm, and that must have been really cool, man. It seems like as a young kid, that's almost a dream, right? Like you have so much area to go play with you. I mean, you say you come from a really big family. You have eight siblings?
Seven.
That's crazy, man. Like you guys must have had so much fun aside from all of the childhood slave labor. What else was going on?
Oh, man. I tell you what, a lot of times you don't appreciate it as much as you do until after you've left it, right? So we moved to the city, to our small town. My parents owned a house in town that they rented out, and then we rented in the country. So that's kind of how that whole thing happened. But when I was in the country, I wanted to be in the city with all my friends playing basketball. As terrible as I am at it, can you imagine, you know, dribbling? This guy.
I could imagine. Oh, I don't see why you wouldn't be good.
Oh, terrible. I'm terrible. I play.
Well, you're 6'4". I would imagine you would be able to be pretty good at basketball.
That's correct. 6'4" and 140 pounds. Yep.
Yeah. I saw that on Wikipedia.
Yeah. Yeah, right next to all the other things I've done. But like I had a paper route in town. So we'd come into town every once in a while. We'd play with our friends. We didn't have, you know, tackle football and, you know, that kind of stuff. But you know, I'd go back to the farm and I'd be like, man, I wish I could be with my friends. But the farm taught me a lot. And really, we were like hobby farm people. You know, we raised chickens and we butchered them and like we ate what we grew, and we had gardens and stuff like that. And the people we rented from had sheep on that area, that he also rented the pastures for sheep. So we had a lot of animals around us. So that was a lot of, I mean, chores up the yin yang. chores.
OSHA violations up the yin yang, my friend.
Oh, it was a good time. But yeah, so it taught me work, you know. There's always something to do. I never got bored. That's one thing. I never get bored ever. You know, which there's something about that I'd like to talk about too later. About being bored.
Bring it up right now. Okay. Bring it up right now. Let's get into it.
On the farm, I guess it ties with the farm. So on the farm, I remember a couple times where I was like, man, what should I do? Like mom kicked me out of the house, you know, she needed a little bit of alone time. And so what do I do? Like I could go play like cops and robbers with my brothers or pipes.
Start a fire in the woods.
I could start a fire. I could go build like ant villages, you know, but you're thinking of all kinds of weird stuff that you're doing. But I never got bored because I always found something to do, right? And I entertained myself, and I had brothers and sisters to do that with as well. I mean, there was this chain in the barn, and there was this old truck that never worked, and it was left on there from the guy that owned the property. And the barn, we would take that chain that was in between the barn roof and then the truck, and we would take that chain, move it up to the top of the truck, and we would swing to the top of the barn, and then we'd do that back and forth. And then there was like an old mattress in the back of the truck, and we would just like land on that.
That sounds like so much fun. As a kid, like that's cool, man. Like that's not something you can do in the city, that's for sure.
I mean, if you had a barn.
Yeah, I guess a barn in the city, an urban garden or something, and a broken down truck on your property and a mattress.
With a mattress in it. Sounds real bougie.
Yeah. That sounds like a lot of fun. Where do you place within your siblings? Like what number are you?
Second to last.
Not that it's a race or anything, but like how old you are, not like your status as a human being.
I'm 28, going on 29 soon.
28, 29. Yeah. Cool. you're second to youngest?
Yeah, second to youngest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you get picked on a lot? Learn how to fight?
I mean, yeah. I didn't think of it as like being bullied by my brothers because, you know, there's always ways to get back at them. Yeah.
Of course. Wet willies.
Yeah, all the stuff.
Put a match between their toes when they're sleeping and light it.
Well, I didn't play with fire that much.
No?
No, I didn't.
You look like someone that would play with a lot of fire.
Okay, correction.
And I'm not saying that just because you're a redhead. You just look like someone that would like fire.
Gingers play with fire. I did. I had this real fascination with destroying things growing up. So I would have like toy trucks and I'd take like a hammer and just like beat the crap out of them. And my dad's like, can't you do anything constructive? You got to destroy everything. But I would start destroying stuff in creative ways. And we're going way off topic here, but I would go to Goodwill and buy these toy castles. And I had army men, and I would like stage a battle. I would do this on the 4th of July, and I would get firecrackers from Walmart parking lot tent. And I would place them in unique ways so that I could light off one firecracker and it would start a whole chain reaction that would destroy the whole setup.
That's awesome.
So like, and then I got creative with like little tubs of gasoline, like, and I'd bury them underneath like a bunch of army guys. You get creative, right? And it was fun. And I'd be like, all right, everybody get around and we're going to watch me destroy stuff. And so people would like gather around and they'd be like, what's he doing now? And I'd light the whole thing, blow it up. And then once I got the camera, then I'd film it.
Yeah, there you go. That actually leads into the next part that I wanted to bring up. I read on the internet, it says that redheads don't have souls. And it sounds like this is actually true based off the story you just said.
Well, we lack them at the beginning, but now we have a lot because we steal yours.
Oh, that's how it works. You know, I have this debate with my wife all of the time. Our niece is also of the redhead variety, and we always have this conversation, and now I have the truth coming from that. That's
it. Doesn't
awesome.
Take I long either. I'm pretty sure my son's already tried to steal mine, but I'm like, I already stole yours. Yeah,
you're a born wizard, you know. That's awesome. That is awesome.
One thing I didn't get back to was the boredom thing.
Yeah. Tell us more, please.
Okay. So there's a while back, I got to meet one of my favorite wedding photographers and creatives in Chicago, yeah. Eric Flohberg. And I got to hang out with him a little bit, but he just put out a thing. He's also got a podcast, which is really exciting. And it's for creative entrepreneurs and wedding photographers and all that kind of stuff. So I listened to that one a lot, and he put out a little screensaver that you could screen shoot or download. And it said, well, I have it on my phone, actually. It says, get bored and make stuff. And I really like that because he was talking about how technology and social media apps are kind of, they take up our boredom times, our times of boredom. And they just like fill that with something to do and entertainment, but it kind of kills your creativity because how do you think of stuff? Unless you have nothing you're just sitting there and you're like, what should I do?
It's a good point. I think about that often. Like what, as creatives and as you know, business owners and everything like that, the way that we spend the majority of our time trying to get our products out is through social media. But I spend little time on social media, and it's not that like it's a brag on my behalf. It's just people have different interests in life. Like, I use Instagram to talk to you, like to talk to my friends. Like, if I'm going to do anything, it's to check in on that. Like, I really don't spend much time doing that. And which is interesting, because selling your stuff online isn't the only way that we can get our products out. And I've learned a lot of that from you, because you do a lot of markets and a lot of like a lot of fair type of setups. And I've seen how you do it, and it's gorgeous. Like, your booth looks like a place I just want to hang out and drink a cup of coffee. And like, it's, you do such a good job. Can you explain to me and the audience kind of your experience as a leathersmith, and how you got involved in doing, you know, fairs, basically a booth at different places where you could sell? What got you into it? Maybe a story about, you know, maybe a crazy customer or something like that.
Yeah. So the first introduction to business actually came through a fair, or it was an Oktoberfest. And we were going to a local boutique, and the owner said, that's a nice bag. And I had made my wife a tote bag, you know, and she's like, oh, he made it for me. And he's like, what? You did that? You made that? I'm like, all sheepish and everything. I'm like, yeah, I did. But she was able to brag about me a little bit. And he's like, oh, you should set up a booth at Oktoberfest. And I'm like, okay, all right. So we did. And it was the most unappealing booth ever. Aesthetically pleasing, zero, right? It had stuff everywhere. And I brought the most random assortment of like decorations and stuff like that. And we set up, and people came through and they liked what we had and they bought stuff. And it was like the craziest experience to see people react the way they did to something that I had made. And at that point, that's when I was hooked as far as business goes. I was like, oh, this is awesome. So, but as far as like making it aesthetically pleasing, I always had an idea of, I personally like aesthetically pleasing coffee shops, boutiques, you know, buildings, just everything. I like it to be aesthetically pleasing. And I can't be the only person that likes that.
I can tell that by looking through your Instagram. Like, your Instagram is aesthetically pleasing to what you like. It's so apparent. And I think that if there was ever a compliment that I could give, is your consistency in presenting through photos an atmosphere. You do such a good job of it. If it's one picture, lots of pictures come to mind, but one in particular is a photo that you took through a doorway, or it's like, it's shadowed and it's of your wife with her, with like a crossbody bag. And like, it's so Josiah. I don't know how else to put it. And that's just one of so many that are incredibly identifiable to your aesthetic. Like, it's something that you nail, and you're so good at being able to portray that. It's amazing to me.
Well, thank you. And that's really something I'm still working on. You know, at the beginning, I didn't know what I wanted to be. I didn't know what the vibe was. I didn't know what direction I wanted to go. Now I have a better idea of it through the help of my friends, my leather friends, and through the help of other photographers, and understanding how to take that photo that portrays that vibe that you want. But it took a while. And if you look through our Instagram, you'll see like the vibe just changed. It changed. Oh, it's crap now, you know? But it's been like a whole journey of getting to that point. The other thing about curation that I love, and a lot of like social media is kind of going away from things that are curated a little bit, you know, more raw, which is great in its own thing. But I think this is personal opinion. I think it shows that you put a lot of thought and intention into whatever you just curated for somebody. I like that, you know, and that's what I like.
I've learned so much from the way that you do that. It's incredible, more than anyone else. Like, I don't know how much I've expressed that to you, but the way that my photos have changed and the consistency in how I shoot video, or I'm sorry, photos, not video, because I kind of own, I already have like a method to my madness with video, but photo in particular, like, and it comes from a compliment that you told me. You're like, man, the lighting in your studio is so good. I'm like, dude, if Josiah thinks my lighting's good, I'm going to lean into it. So I'm like, I try to get shadows in my things. Like, I'm trying to be more creative because of that one compliment. It's been so inspiring. And just having consistency, either stick to cool lighting or warm lighting, like start there and build off of, okay, what am I going to do next? Am I going to have consistent, like emphasis on shadows? Am I going to use more highlights? Am I going to use, you know, what color palette am I going to use? Like, I, when I saw how well you did it, I knew, okay, I got to come up with a color palette, and mine is black, red, and white. Like, those are what I try to highlight through everything, because I want to present my Instagram like a evolving catalog. And I think that that's something I learned directly from you. So credit to you. If anyone thinks that I take cool photos, which I don't, I'm just not that good at it. So, but I learned that from you.
You're doing a great job.
Thanks, man. I wanted to go back to your experience with doing the fairs, doing the farmers markets, doing the things that you do. You said when you started, your booth was not as appealing as it is now. How did you evolve in your booth setup? Because I think a lot of the people that are listening and myself can learn a lot from your evolution in that aspect of your business, because that's your big money maker, right?
Yeah, it is right now. I think there's like phases to business, especially our type of business. And from what I've seen from other people that have been successful in it, you know, that you start out with like learning the craft and you're putting it on Instagram and maybe you get a website started and then you kind of go heavy into shows and events and things like that until you get to the point where you don't have time to do that. And then you're pretty much solely on the internet, like website and stuff. And then if you want to go in this direction, you get a brick and mortar. That seems like the progression. And I feel like right now I'm in like heavy events. I'm event heavy. Like last year, for a few months, 3 months maybe, we were like just about every weekend we were at a show. And then sometimes on Thursday. And then one day we did two in one day. We've done that a few times.
I remember that.
It's nuts. It's so draining, but it's such a good time. And you get back home and you're like, crap, I got to unload all the car. I got to put all my stuff away now. But like the day is so full and exciting. And unless you have a terrible day, but usually.
Sure, that happens. Those happen. The best of people that do this still have bad days, I'm sure.
For sure.
I think that it's cool because I get to see, I'm privy to be able to see kind of the behind the scenes thing. If you get a new stand or something that you're really, really excited about, you share it amongst our friends and our community. And I'm not saying like our friends, like it's exclusive to other people. I'm not trying to create that whole vibe. It just so happens that you're my friend and we talk often. That's the only thing. And I'm fortunate to be able to see, your excitement for these different things in your life. Something is simple, and it's not that it's simple, but like getting a new stand, or if I get a new light setup, the first person I think of like, oh man, Josiah would like this light. I don't know. Like I think that so much, like it's really cool, man. I love it. I love that we're able to have that and actually really encourage each other and be excited for each other, man. I'm truthfully excited for you. If you get on and you're like, you know, excited, I don't know, I'm overusing the word excited, but if you come on and you're pumped on something, like I genuinely feel that for you, man.
Well, and same for you. I think some of that excitement comes from because we haven't taken a loan out for the business, you know? So I get things as I can, you know what I'm saying? So you sell stuff and you take some of that money and you make your business better. And it's like a slow growth, but it's a good growth and it's intentional because during the time that I don't have the money to make that, to get that better stand or whatever, I'm like scouring the internet for the stand that fits our vibe the best or that I want it to be. And so, and then you're doing all that research. And then finally the time comes that you've saved enough money for that machine or whatever. And then you get it. And then, you know, you wait for the truck to come and you get it. And then you're so freaking excited about it.
Mail day. I think that that's really encouraging. I think that sometimes people might see someone as far into their career with Leathercraft as you are and be like, oh man, well, you have all of the equipment or the tools and all of these things. So of course you're successful, or of course you're able to be at this level in your craft. Little do they know that you chipped away at every single hand tool, every single stand that you have for your booth, every single table that you have for your booth, every piece of hardware that you've upgraded into your catalog, all of these things. Like, it took time and perseverance. It didn't happen overnight. And I think that's really encouraging because a lot of people get like bummed out when they see someone at the point that you're at in your career, thinking that they'll never be able to obtain the objects that you have.
Well, to blow up that whole idea. I have one machine and that's my sewing machine. Everything else is hand tools. And I have like one of them. Right. And my beveler is getting dull. And I'm like, man, I need a new blade, or I need to sharpen it and learn how to do this. But I think it's too far gone. So I really need to like get a new blade. So, but you know what? Now I got to sell a bag so I can, you know, make that happen. So.
And that's really what it's like. I'm at that position right now. I launched the 21 grams leather balm, and I made a whole run for pre-orders, and I just sold them. And now I'm getting the like slow kind of trickle in orders based off of the marketing, the very grassroots. I haven't paid a penny for marketing for that at all. I'm just like, if somebody orders it, I'll send it out. But I'm at the position now where I need to sell something to buy the materials to make the leather balm to fulfill these orders. Like, it's really a grind like that. Like, you know, it's not like I just have a warehouse where I'm pouring it, you know, in large batches. When I say it's handmade in small batches, and you can relate to this, like, you, it costs money to make the things that we're doing. And mm-hmm. if we're not selling products, we can't afford to buy the materials to make more products. You can't sit on inventory.
It's all part of the build.
So speaking of which, can you tell us a little bit about how you're able to put a well-rounded collection, whether that's bags or when you're releasing something, what does that process look like to you?
Okay. So this is good timing because we're designing a new bag right now as we speak. Well, not as we speak, but you get it. We are designing a new bag and we're really excited about this. And this time we're giving ourselves a timetable. Before, I didn't have a timetable and the process went way too long. And then, well, here's a failure of sorts. The Cove bag, right? It's on the back burner right now because I released it and it didn't go well. I had issues with the bag. So the whole thing was like back burner. So now I'm missing a particular spot in our bag collection, and that is a purse, a medium-sized purse. So Bree this time actually had the idea of a particular bag that she wants and likes. And so we've been working together to design that bag, which is really exciting to me because this is the first bag she's helped design, which is huge because she's going to be really behind this one even more because she was heavily involved in it.
I love that. That's kind of like in the same sense where you're talking about how you have a collection of different size bags. I would say the closest thing to that for me is wallets. Like I make wallets and belts. That's what my collection is. And my wife helped me out with the design aspect of the woman's wallet. I had a woman's wallet last year and I made her one so she could prototype it for a long time and tell me all of the things that she liked and disliked about it. It's not a wallet that I would use. And it's shocking how honest your wife will be when it comes to things like this. Like, I'm sure having Bree's feedback on things like this has been so beneficial, because you're probably not walking around with a medium-sized bag all of the time. So you're not going to be able to put the wear and tear and tell... You're not going to be able to understand what the needs are for your clients that are going to actually be purchasing these bags. So having someone it's good to have someone to help you out with that.
Absolutely. I think if I didn't have that, you have to really rely on feedback from folks that maybe they don't have your bag, but they will tell you what they look for in a bag, and pockets will come up. They always want the pockets. I actually just did like a few questions on our Instagram stories, just kind of seeing what people look for in bags and stuff like that. And I actually got a really good response from the group of people that saw our stories, and that was really cool. So you either have someone helping you that wears the bag, or you need to rely heavily on people's input on what to make and how it worked out.
I had something similar happen like that recently. I really wanted to do a front body, cross body, I guess, whatever bag, like a fanny pack that you wear across your chest. And I was heavily influenced by Hemlock and Hyde's kind of bag that looks similar to a fanny pack, I guess, but it's just designer and beautiful and insane. And I was in Georgia visiting my brother-in-law, my wife's brother, and we got to go see our mutual friend, Austin. And he had gotten one of those bags from Hemlock and Hyde, and I saw it, and I'm like, one, in awe, because their craftsmanship and their work is just flawless. And I'm just a huge fan. I'm a huge fan of the work that they do, but I'm also privy to having friendships with both of them, and I'm a bigger fan of their friendship. And that says a lot, because I'm a fanboy for what they make. And so I got to see this bag in person. I'm like, oh man, this is so cool. And so I wanted to give it a go, like try to make my own. And unfortunately my wife would never, she's just not, that's not the kind of bag for her. Like she's self-admittedly like not cool and hip. She doesn't try to be like, I'm the cool hip one in the relationship and I'm lame. So that says a lot, you know, like,
oh, you're awful harsh on yourself.
you know, little self deprecation is always good, I guess.
Yeah, stay humble.
Yeah. and so I loved it and I gave it a go. Like I made a couple prototypes. First with paper, then with some really, really junky, cheap leather. And then I, you know, made three of them that I could give out to a couple family members and friends or whatever. And they tried it out. And I lost interest in it. And I didn't get the feedback that I was hoping from people. And I realized the amount of effort, especially because everything I do is hand-stitched. And it's hard, man. It's hard. My fingertips are numb always now from stitching. Like, you know that. You hand stitch for a really long time until you smartened up and got a sewing machine, which I'm like so stubborn until no longer am I stubborn. I'm like, I can't wait till I get some money put together to get a sewing machine.
It does help. I'm not going to lie. It does help. But I'd hand stitch forever, like way too long, probably. 6 years, almost 7 years. And big bags too. I was stitching totes and it's wild. So dumb. Well, not dumb, but yeah, it was a lot.
So your tip of the day is move away from hand stitching and get a sewing machine. Save yourself some time.
I might catch a lot of flack for that.
You know what?
Some people really like the hand stitching. And people will be like, but the hand stitching is so much tougher. And I'm like, that's why they quit using sewing machines so long ago. Because it's terrible. And you know, it's crap. No, that ain't the case.
I think that there's a sense of pride for people that hand stitch and make that part of their marketing gimmick almost. That's me. I'm saying marketing gimmick for me because I really lean into it. And it's almost therapeutic to me unless I'm sewing something that just takes way too long. And I'm like, man, I'm bored doing this. But it is something that I enjoy. And I think that there is an aesthetic. And the majority of people that are going to notice the difference between hand stitching and machine stitching are leather crafters, and we're not selling our products to each other. Hate to break it to you guys. All you leather smiths out there listening to this, quit trying to appeal to your peers with your products. Like, sell them to your customers. That's the most important thing.
And that right there, that's important, because if you're marketing, so I've been like really diving into the marketing side of business, and marketing to the wrong people, like your peers, like,
yeah,
because maybe you're putting out the wrong type of content that your customer doesn't even care to see. Like you hand stitching for 30 seconds fast, you know,
your customer
could care less. Maybe they see it one time. They're like, oh, that's interesting. And then the second time they see it, they're like, unfollow. They're like, why am I losing all these people? It's because you're putting out stuff that they don't really want to see. But I'm also in that realm trying to figure out what my customer base wants to see from us. And I'm leaning more towards lifestyle than me down in the shop all the time.
I notice it, man. I notice it. You're speaking to your customers. And I think that that's cool, because that's something I want to dive in really quickly, is how you communicate with your customers. And I'm not talking about the conversations that you have when you're at a fair, or the conversations through, you know, customer support through your website and stuff like that, but more how you communicate to your customers through your imagery or the storytelling that you do. Do you have any tips? Because I'm all ears. I'm constantly trying to learn how to do this better. And I think a lot of the people that are going to be tuning in to this episode in particular, because you're so good at this, are going to want to know how you do this.
Well, to start off with, I'm learning this myself as I go with the help of some friends. So I don't have everything figured out here, but from what I've heard from my friends and chatting with them about it, and what I'm trying to do is show how I use my bags just in life and try to figure out, where does my customer hang out? Where do they eat? Where do they go get coffee? Like, what type of coffee shop do they go to? Do they go to a grungy coffee shop, or do they go to like a super clean Scandi Mod coffee shop? So if my market, my target market or my customer spends time at a super modern looking clean coffee shop, I'm not going to take my photo of my bag as me sitting there drinking my latte in like a super grungy coffee shop, because then they're going to be like, eh, I don't like that coffee shop. And then they won't even look at your bag.
It's so true how that works out that way. It's in, I get that all the time. Even just what you might put your products up against, like in the sense of where you, how you photograph it. Like if I put my stuff, if my stuff looks too clean, I feel like it's not going to appeal the type of people that purchase my things. They're either going to purchase it because of my story, because of the part of myself that I'm willing to share on the internet, and how I got into this and all of that kind of stuff, or they're going to purchase it because they're tattoo enthusiasts and they're fans of like Murder City Devils and drinking PBR. Like that's my customer base, is the dive bar people that like to get in fights. Like that's assuming, based off of the little bit of research that I've done. I have no, like, At the beginning of starting doing more of the custom stuff, I got a lot of inquiries from people that wanted me to do more of the Western tooling type stuff. And that went away really quick. Now it's more of the people that are like, hey, my husband is a tattoo artist. Like now I'm starting to make products for tattoo artists using their imagery. And it's exciting because that's a big market. And I know how to speak that language, right? Like I can't appeal to the coffee shop scene because they're going to laugh me out of the coffee shop. Yeah, the pinky up coffee crew. That sounds like a gang that I would not fit in with. So I think that's important too, is knowing your audience, knowing the people that that are looking at your stuff and understanding the lingo that's spoke within those communities as well.
Kind of along those lines, you want to be yourself, right? Like you don't want to be putting on this whole, like, whatever that word is, this idea of who you are if it's not real and if you don't like that stuff. I mean, I make the things that I like. I think they look pretty and, you know, and I go to places that I like. Therefore, I take pictures of my stuff in places that I like. And hopefully those are the people that I attract.
That's the idea. And I think that that's incredibly sound advice. I think that that's so key. And that goes further than just the products that you make, but the person that you present yourself as. If you are trying to appeal to a group of people that aren't you, it gets so tiring so quick. And I had a really good conversation with my mother-in-law, who I love dearly, when I started getting a little bit of traction, like on TikTok, and I was asked to be on podcasts, and I was asked to, you know, to do interviews and stuff like that. And she just told me right out of the get, like, just be yourself now. It's important that you're 100% yourself now, and whatever you want to share with people, make that choice now, because you don't want to backtrack later in life and be like, oh, I didn't mean that, or have to live this whole portion of your life as a facade, being somebody that you're not, because that's tiring, man. Like if I came on to this podcast and I was like, hey, I'm a podcast guy, and this is, you know, I'm into coffee, and I'm into monster trucks, but I'm also into throwing ninja stars or like import cars. I don't know. I'm just throwing out weird random things. I would get so tired of pretending all of those things. It's just so much easier to let it flow. And I see it often, people trying to fit into this box that they think there's a market in, and they don't last. It's real simple. It dries up real quick when you're faking it.
Another thing that's kind of fun is I have a lot of passions in coffee and photography, and I've done some wedding photography. I've shot film for wedding, and not like camera film, but like done video, and I've done a few just like as a photographer. So I have dabbled in those worlds, and I have friends in those worlds, and I can take leathercraft and adopt it to those worlds too, like coffee, wedding photographers. I just got to do like a super cool project with a local wedding photographer here. She had like she gifts her clients 4x6 photos of their wedding, and then she wanted a leather envelope to put it in.
Perfect. Yeah. You're so good at this too. And I've brought this up in so many different conversations, our old podcasts and stuff like this, is how, and I'm not trying to be over flattering to you, it's just the truth. Like,
you're making me
it's
blush. The
truth. Yeah, you're like, oh, stop it some more. How good you are at that. Like, you did a set of menus, and you've done these like really creative projects that are so out of the box. It really is thinking out of the box, and it fits your aesthetic so well. Not only that, I think that there's a lot of insight in what you just said, in the sense that you can fit your craft into so many more things that you're interested in, whether it's photography. And this goes out to the people that are listening that are maybe new in leathercraft, or people that have been doing it for a while and are tired of making the same old things, the same whatever it is. What do you do on the weekends? Why are you do you go to rodeos? Then cool, make products for the rodeo. Do you go to coffee shops, make things that are feasible for that? Are you going to punk rock shows? Make coasters for the punk rock venue that you're going to. Like, get in contact with these people and think creatively. And the world's actually really big in that sense. Like, prime example, like, I know how to speak the language of tattoo, the terminology, way more than I do leather craft. Like, 90% of the tools that I use, I don't even know what they're called. And I just pretend like I do because I'm somewhat of like a public figure that I'm like, I kind of have to know what I'm talking about, even though I don't. I teach courses and I don't know what half of it is. Anyways, I digress. Knowing your audience is so key, and your audience is your peers, people that you go out and spend time with, those type of people. My cousin, my cousin-law, my wife's cousin, is really into like import cars, like whatever Japanese like race car kind of stuff. And he, one time during Christmas, you know, he was like, hey man, you should make these like gas cap covers where you out of leather, so that when you fill up your gas, it kind of goes over your car and it protects it, so if gas drips, all that kind of stuff. I'm like, okay, I'll make you one. And he's like, no, you could really sell these. I'm like, I don't know anybody but you that has one of these cars and is into this. So that's a subculture I don't know anything about. And if I were to enter it just to like solicit my products, that I'd be laughed out of that whole circle, that whole community. And that's not what we should do. Stick to your niche and what you enjoy, because you're going to burn out anyways. You'll burn out on doing something you don't like anyways.
Yeah, it'll be a lot harder to wedge yourself into that niche.
Absolutely. Any tips that you would like to leave with the audience as this week's guest co-host?
The idea of thinking outside the box is and kind of doing not what everybody else is doing, or taking what is working and then make it specific to you. I think that's very important to one, stand out, because like there's a ton of leather crafters out there, and how do you stand out? Your story, yes, people might connect with you, but also like, how are you a little bit different than everybody else? And don't in marketing, for instance, everyone is like, spend money on ads, spend money on Facebook ads, Instagram ads, Pinterest ads, all that stuff, spend all the money on that. And then you completely neglect the type of stuff that was done years back that nobody's doing. And you could be the only one doing it. Like, for instance, cold emails to businesses, and you're like, hey, we do wholesale coasters. I noticed you have a dope coffee shop, bar, whatever. We have this offering. Just wanted to let you know. You know, like, that's a great way. Maybe. And the other thing is, people that are running businesses like yourself, you're not scrolling through Instagram. You're not going to see that ad. And you're busy trying to keep your business in afloat and keeping a brick and mortar together, and staffing issues and supply issues. And maybe you're like, I really want to like spruce up my coffee shop. I want to have some merch to sell to somebody, but I don't have time to scroll on Instagram to see that guy's ad. So he just reached out to me in his email, and I had some time. I was going through my emails and I saw it, and I sparked an idea. Maybe I don't buy it now. Maybe I buy it in a year or two, but you were the only one that reached out.
You just explained that so, so well. The way that you kind of painted the picture with that is so good. I think that that's key, because you can't catch businesses that you're trying to do B2B business to business transactions with on Instagram, because if they're a successful business, they don't have time. The successful businesses aren't scrolling through Instagram. They just don't have time.
And people too. Successful people, if that's your client, they're not going to be on just scrolling through Twitter and Instagram and all that stuff. They're going to be busy with being successful. So you got to find another way to get to them.
At every level of what we're making, we're making luxury goods no matter what. You're making luxury goods, I'm making luxury goods, because the price point, unless you're losing money on material costs and you're not paying yourself at all, it's in a price point that would be a luxury good. People can go to Tilly's and they can buy a $40 wallet that will last them a year and it's quick fashion or whatever, or they're buying something for you from you for a couple hundred bucks that will last them their whole life. But there's a price gap in that. The people that we're trying to attract to our business are people that make money. If they're making money, they're not spending time on Instagram looking. So you got to think of alternatives. And your tip of cold emailing, cold calling, going and stopping at the businesses in your small town, your big city, your bus commute, your drive commute, where you go and get tacos, where you go and get a pint of beer after work, whatever it is, go in there, talk to people, let them know, talk about your business nonstop and let them know that you can make these products for them. I know for me, people see my products is like mostly like tattoo imagery and stuff like that. But there's a whole other side of things that I don't post a whole bunch, like production work, doing small keychains for, I'm lucky I work with some movie producers and directors because I'm close to Hollywood. And those are the bread and butter, man. Like, snap those things out. They may not be glamorous for Instagram and you may not get a million views because they're not that exciting, but that's how you pay your bills so that you do have the money to buy more materials to make the things that you want to
get your new beveler.
I love, yeah, you need to get one. Josiah, thank you so much for sharing.
I have one more thing.
Sharing that tip. Yeah, absolutely. One I got thing. All the time in the world. Okay. I'm in no rush.
So I these are things that I'm working on myself. And I learned these tips from a guy named Jai Long, who has a podcast. He's a business coach and he's got a ton of businesses. You just look them up. But he talked about going outside of the box thinking outside the box when it comes to marketing. And so he was like giving examples of how he's marketed and it's worked out for him. So I'm kind of just like getting into this and I've been inspired by him. And I just actually took a little workshop with him about marketing with purpose, and just like being intentional with the type of things that you're marketing or the way you're marketing. And I also listened to an episode the other day about him, or that he was giving a tip about marketing. And he said, talk to people that do a lot of talking about your business. So just make conversation with people that do a lot of talking. For instance, barbers, baristas, those people talk to how many people in a day, and they just make casual conversation. And he is a wedding photographer, and he talks about what he's doing on the weekend and how he's going to this city to do a wedding. And so all through the next week, that person is talking to other people throughout the community, and that person may come across someone that's like, what are you doing this weekend? Well, we're planning our wedding. And he's like, oh, we have a guy that comes through here all the time. And he's a wedding photographer. Yeah. So talk to people that do a lot of talking.
I think that that's great. The like you said, the barbers, the coffee makers, I would botch that word if I tried to say it again, babistras. I'll botch it anyways. I'll botch it. Whatever. I got a chipped tooth. You think I care about messing up a word? Come on.
Nah, no, you don't.
Ah, not at all. Yeah, man, those are really, really good, valuable. That's valuable insight. Like I always say, like people that are listening to this, we're not going to be able to do a demonstration on how to hand stitch. There's plenty of those out there. I post those on one of my Instagram pages. You're constantly showing off your work and how you do things. But I think the insights about marketing and that kind of stuff is way more valuable, because even if you know how to make the most gorgeous product and you don't know how to put it in front of someone's eyes and let them see it, you're gonna sit on all of your products. So hopefully we inspired some people with this conversation. With that said, Josiah, please take a few minutes, tell people where they can find your work, your website, your Instagram, Your TikTok, your OnlyFans, all of the things, brother.
Josiah Hansen, Hansen Leather Co. I'm at Instagram at Hansen Leather Co. I'm at Facebook at Hansen Leather Co. If you want to actually get a hold of me, go to Instagram. I'm never on Facebook. You can check out our website, HansenLeatherCo.com. Those are the areas that were the most prominent.
That is awesome. Well, I know you're a big TLC fan, so I'll leave you with this one quote. Don't go chasing waterfalls, okay?
Man, that really hits home.
Well, yeah, really, you're a super fan. What else?
I appreciate that.
RIP Left Eye, you know what I mean?
Nope.
Nope. Nope. Not at all. Not at all.
I grew up on a farm, bro.
Thank you so much, my friend. And yeah, it's been good. We're going to have you back on, obviously, because we're always going to have you back on. So thank you for your time. Your time is valuable. So thank you for putting the effort into this. I appreciate you, brother.
Appreciate you. It's been a blast.
All right, guys, if you've made it to this far in the podcast, please take a moment to share this with one or two of your friends. Subscribe to this if you're watching on YouTube. Follow us, like us, do all of the things I need to get better at promoting this podcast. So if you like it, share it with a friend. Otherwise, don't. I don't know what to tell you.
It doesn't have to be a friend to share it with. Share it to randos.
All right, guys, we'll see you on the next Wake and Make podcast.